is the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Dangney here, John Curly away for just this one day, doing good work, actually training for to be a hospice volunteer, if you can believe it. So John is doing wonderful work. And in the meantime, we have Danny O'Neill, who's filling in excellently.
I appreciate you having me.
It's always fun with you, Danny. And I know that you're a sports insider, and I think you love the chance to not talk sports when you come on our show. But I'm always dying to talk sports with somebody on this show. And so we're going to talk about sports, but more in a sociological framework, at least at this point. You know, this Sunday's Super Bowl, I think it's going to be the bitterest pill to swallow for the city of New Orleans. I mean, they feel like they got out and out robbed. They should be in the Super Bowl. I can't imagine being a New Orleans fan watching the Super Bowl. But I think runner-up for the bitterest fans might be those living in St. Louis. After all, it was a mere 3 years ago that the St. Louis Rams were the they were one of our big rivals. They actually they never had a great team, but they always did well against the Seahawks. And now the St. Louis Rams fans have been forced to see their owner up and move the franchise to L.A. And after only 3 years, after a long, probably a decade's worth of waiting for another Super Bowl for the St. Louis Rams, they now have to stomach the Los Angeles Rams in the Super Bowl against the team that they also despise, New England, because apparently, like with the Seahawks, they helped prevent a kind of dynasty when the St. Louis Rams had won one Super Bowl the next year, or maybe 2 years later, they lost again to New England in an upset. That was the greatest show on turf, one of my favorite teams ever.
St. Louis Rams won the Super Bowl in 1999.
Okay.
2 years later, they were back in the Super Bowl against a plucky little Patriots team.
That's
that
right.
At that point, had won no Super Bowls.
Wow.
Piloted by a relatively unknown young quarterback who had supplanted Drew Bledsoe as the starter. And what do you know? The New England Patriots won an absolute nail biter of a game that has since become shrouded in controversy following, in part, the disclosure that the New England Patriots had been taping opposing coaches' video.
That was that year?
No.
Okay.
But they're all tied together.
Yes.
And that there are people, and the Boston Herald ran a report that the Patriots had seen footage of the Rams walkthrough before that Super Bowl. So as everybody started to dip in and investigate the shenanigans that the Patriots were alleged to have pulled off, there were continued scrutiny and reports regarding that Super Bowl. The Boston Herald has since apologized for that report, and nobody has ever definitively proved that the Patriots did anything. There's been nothing to substantiate any claims that they cheated or had access to it, but people in St. Louis remain both suspicious and bitter over that. And now they're also extremely hostile to the Rams. They're actually going to be rooting for the Patriots, because the only thing worse than the Patriots winning another Super Bowl in their eyes would be the Rams 3 years after relocation. And they relocated after 10 years of sustained mediocrity. They alternated between being outright awful and mediocre.
Yeah.
And then watched a guy from St. Louis move their team to Los Angeles and Stan Kroenke.
Yeah. You think people hate Howard Schultz in this town? Howard Schultz probably doesn't have nearly as much venom pointed in his direction as Stan Kroenke, because Stan kept the team. It would be like Howard Schultz from Seattle building his empire, Starbucks empire in Seattle, and deciding, you know what, I want to move my team to Oklahoma City or L.A. More preferably. And so they say that nothing is going to stick in the craw of a St. Louis Ram fan or any St. Louis citizen more than seeing Stan Kroenke, you know, holding up the Super Bowl trophy at the end. It's like, yeah, I'm completely sympathetic to St. Louis fans. I can't stand New England, and I'll be rooting for the Rams, but this gives me pause. I think maybe, like St. Louis fans, I'd like to see a way in which neither team could win the Super Bowl. I might be happier.
I would agree with you. I would say this. I'm definitely rooting for the Rams, because Boston has had too much. They've had too much with the Patriots and five Super Bowls. They've had too much with the Red Sox winning four World Series in the past 15 years. And
their hockey team, the Bruins, have won recently.
Yeah, and their basketball team mixed one in there. Here's the thing. Boston, I see as one of three brothers.
Okay.
Philadelphia and New York. They're three brothers. And New York is the most it's the oldest and the most fiscally successful.
Yeah.
That's the one that went to business school. They've always had everything figured out. They've got the nice suits.
They've had all the advantages.
Yeah, they live on Wall Street. They know how the financial sector
works.
Philly is the rough and tumble brother who hangs drywall.
Okay.
You don't want to mess with Philly.
Okay.
But Philly's not the most sophisticated of the three brothers.
Yeah.
But everybody knows that if it ever came down to an apocalyptic scenario, that Philly's the one you'd want to be alive with, because they're going to be best prepared to fend off the zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
When the New Yorker's brother. And Boston is the overeducated, suffering from an inadequacy complex, because he knows he's not as rich as New York, and he knows that Philly can absolutely whoop his butt. So he sits around in his overly stuffed woolen sweaters, reciting Walt Whitman or whatever crap there is, and talking about all of the different misery, and has a martyr's complex because of how earnest he's tried and how much he's suffered and all of the different things he's done for the environment. And watching that fan base.
Yeah.
Which whined nonstop, had such a martyr's complex about not having won a World Series since 1916 or whenever the hell it was, that since they started winning, they haven't stopped, and they're completely insufferable.
You know, it sounds like you and the Golden State Warriors, Danny O'Neill.
That's possibly
insufferable
true.
Insufferable
yeah, that's
winners.
True. Yeah.
Although I happen to like Golden State Warriors a lot.
Yeah, I would think
well.
That there's some truth there.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Now, I was thinking you were doing a birth order, brothers, but you're not. You're doing like a character analysis. So my question, though, to you is, it seems to me that Boston could argue we are the best of both worlds. We're tough like Philly, and we're smart like New Yorkers, or
no,
successful like New Yorkers.
They've got an inferiority complex that's just maddening.
Well, yes.
And they can't even just shut up and be happy about all their success. The Patriots have to go out, "Oh, nobody believes in us. Bet against us" was a t-shirt. No, you can't play the overachiever card.
Don't
now.
You hate Stan Kroenke when you're explaining how I should pronounce his name, because it's spelled Kroenke, so I was guessing Kroenke. Says, like a donkey.
Kroenke, like a donkey. Now, I don't like him.
Yeah.
But I don't have the same passionate disregard and loathing that I have of the New England Patriots. I'm tired of them winning.
Okay. And one thing, do you like the commercials? I'm a huge football fan, and I'm a slightly annoyed, even though I do like the entertainment value. I'm slightly annoyed that the commercials during the Super Bowl get every bit as much attention as the game itself. How do you feel about people commercializing football in a way? I mean, do you enjoy watching
yeah,
the commercials?
I like it.
You do, okay.
I like the whole event. I like that there is an entire game where it doesn't matter how long the game goes. Everybody kind of gathers around, and everything about it can be seen and scrutinized and asked, is it entertaining? I like the day.
Yeah, okay.
I love the fact it's a national holiday.
The social gathering aspect of it, you think it's great. Okay, well, we're going to play. This is Toyota's RAV4 hybrid ad featuring, and I don't know how you even feel about this particular person, a female football player named Tony Harris, who plays at the community college level and is entertaining four college scholarships, not major colleges, but four college scholarships to play football. Toyota decided to use her in an ad.
They've said a lot of things about Tony Harris. They said she was too small. They said she was too slow. Too weak. They said she'd never get to the next level. Never inspire a new generation. Never get a football scholarship. Yeah, people have made a lot of assumptions about Tony.
But I've never been a big fan of assumptions.
And neither have we. Introducing the hybrid that will shatter perceptions. The all-new built-for-speed RAV4 hybrid.
Okay, does that make your skin crawl, or does it inspire you to greater heights?
Well, I would say this. I'm happy for her.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that she got paid, and if she didn't get paid, she gets the increased attention of it. I think it's awesome. I always think it's odd when a company doing a transparently calculated move of self-promotion mm-hmm. partners itself with an ideal or an achievement that really doesn't relate to his product at all. It's essentially trying to co-opt an individual achievement. I don't really care. It doesn't. Do I think that tomorrow we're going to have an influx that the gender balance of football is going to change? No. But I also think if a female athlete can be competitive and wants to compete in tackle football, there shouldn't be anything stopping her from doing that.
I agree with this take on anything, any kind of commercial is going to be a corporate, botch, in effect. I mean, just by the very nature of what they're doing, they're going to, in effect, co-opt whoever they're advertising. I understand that, just as a general rule, because they're cashing in. They wouldn't do this if they didn't think it was going to help either their image or help ultimately sell Toyotas in some particular fashion. However, given that, I like the fact that this is who they chose to highlight. You could highlight all sorts of people. You can highlight, you know, Shaquem Griffin if you want to. I think that's great. I have no problem with Toyota saying, hey, we are going to highlight this person because we're really proud of this person. And yeah, maybe we're using her financially, but it's still, it's like, it's her choice. And it is a very glamorous, flattering portrayal of these. So I don't, I understand the general philosophical critique of all corporate sponsorships basically corroding, you know, what they're sponsoring. However, at the same time, I do think that better that than somebody else. I never heard of this woman, and I think that's great. I don't think she has a prayer to play at any kind of significant collegiate level, but still, I'm all for, and, you know, bully for her and bully for Toyota's RAV4 hybrid, I guess.
I think it's awesome that, and hopefully she did get paid, but we can't expect companies to be agents of social change. And I think that that's where it gets, you get mistaken or misled when you start thinking it's a calculated advertising maneuver. They are targeting a certain type of person, and hopefully it pays off, because that would mean that there are more people there. But you can't count on a company being an agent of social change.
You can't count on it, but I think it can. That's actually an interesting issue. Can, you know, a corporate decision change things? I think that when Nike decided to put Colin Kaepernick in at the heart of its ad when he was not well received by the general public, I think that was a calculated move that might soften people's take on him. Even though it's a cynical corporate move, I get why they're cashing in on Colin Kaepernick, but I actually think, I never thought of it before, that maybe, you know, corporations could be agents of social change, just a little bit on the edges. It's like putting gay characters on commercial TV. Now, you might have said this is 20, 30 years ago when soap did it for the first time. Well, that's groundbreaking. I think it did, and it helped mold our attitudes toward homosexuality without us even being aware of it.
I would say,
and that's pretty corporate.
It can be.
Yeah.
You can't count on it.
No.
Because I would say,
that I would agree with.
I would say this, that when Nike makes a decision to put Colin Kaepernick in its ad and feature it, they're not doing that out of this is what we believe. They're doing that out of, hey, we think that there's enough consumers that support Colin Kaepernick that are going to start buying our products to offset the moves, the fact that people are going to also be antagonized by. We're going to bet on the marketplace that there are more people supporting him than against him.
I know, I understand that, but corporations are made up of individual people, and I can't believe that they are that ultimately cynical that they would actually go against something. I mean, they presented him in such flattering light, it was hard not to be on Colin Kaepernick's side. I think if they all disagreed with Colin Kaepernick passionately, if they were all like Jerry Jones or somebody like that, they wouldn't have risked doing that. I think there was some sympathy in his direction to justify allowing that to go on.
I don't believe there's nobility in corporations.
In any form.
I almost certainly believe that they are, at the end of the day, couched in business calculations of, is this going to bankrupt our company or not?
Well, no, I grant you that. It was a risk that they took, and the calculation, I'm sure, had a bottom line. But I think that doesn't mean that they had no kind of feeling toward that. But anyway, we'll sort of move on to that. Move on with this. I want to ask you very quickly.
That's so cute, Tom, that you believe in the uplifting the ideals of a corporation.
It's so not often, but when they pick the right guys, when they're on my team, I'm all for it. So, you know, it's perfect you're filling in for John, because that was very John response. I mean, John is the ultimate cynic. He doesn't believe in any kind of good thing that anybody does is always for an ulterior motive. And I keep trying to tell John that's just not the case, that we're better than that. And he keeps trying to convince me that we're worse than I think people are. So anyway, but moving on, listen, I want to ask you about
John on that
one. Super, I know you are, clearly. I want to ask you quickly about the Super Bowl. I was talking to Mike Salk, who's the Brock and Salk show. He's the program director
my
for
boss.
ESPN 710. We talked about you, actually.
Yeah, fills out my review forms.
And we were talking in the hall like we like to do in the mornings, and we both agreed that this Super Bowl was about the least interested we'd ever been in recent memory of Super Bowls. And again, I can't speak for him, but for me, one is because New England made it, I think New England's probably, they're the favorite and they're probably going to win. And the fact that the Rams are in because of that New Orleans call, to me, it just sort of typified how I thought the entire NFL season went for me. I'm a huge Seahawks fan, obviously, and I think the absolute arbitrariness of some of the calls in the Seahawks games, both for and against, that contributed to the final, to who won and who lost, makes me think the entire game seems on shaky ground, that I'm beginning to think that the NFL might have a crisis on its hand, not for the concussion business and lack of insurance, because it doesn't seem fair anymore. You can't count on anything because the rules are adjudicated so arbitrarily. I'm losing interest, and I'm a lifelong football fan.
What do you think
of that?
Well, I think that you are reflecting a feeling that a lot of people have.
You do? Okay.
And
that's,
I think,
good.
Part of it is that we fixate on officiating more. We watch replays more. That it's a part of the game is scrutinizing and analyzing the decisions that the referees make in real time. Think about it. Every network now has a former referee as part of its broadcast.
Yeah.
Whether it's someone that's in a remote command center that comes to, or someone even in cases, I'm assuming that CBS is going to have Gene Steratore, who is their former official, a guy that up until last year was one of the top officials, that he's going to be there as part of their broadcast. And if not, he'll certainly be available via live TV remote. We scrutinize it.
So our effort at getting it precise actually backfires on us, because there's no such thing as perfect precision.
And we exaggerate and we focus on and we scrutinize the mistakes.
Because I'm convinced the game is no more, the rules were as broken as often in 1960s as they are in 2018.
Here's the one thing, though, is that officials are being asked to look for more.
Oh, is that right?
Officials are certainly being asked to look for more of, is there a hit to the head of a defenseless receiver? Officials are now in charge of seeing, is someone concussed or not? They have to be able to diagnose if someone's woozy and unable to get up. They're being asked to look for, is he initiating contact with his helmet? That's been a point of emphasis this year.
So it's because of our own society's demands on the safety of football that actually is hurting the game.
They have, and the league officials have stepped up by saying, we're going to enforce the rules better, and that we're going to make sure, we're going to make football safer by forcing the players to adhere to the rules that make it safer.
Yeah.
And if we're having more missed calls, and I'm not sure that we are, but if there are more missed calls, it's not because the officials are worse. And it's not really because the rules have changed all that dramatically, but how the referees are being asked to apply those rules is diverting their attention. You're having the mistake in the New Orleans Rams game that happened that has everybody. It was a pretty egregious violation.
Yeah.
He hit the receiver before the ball got there, and he also hit him in the head neck area.
Yeah.
It was two different fouls. And in fact, he's been fined for one of those fouls. At the same time, officiating mistakes happen.
Yeah.
And what I'm seeing, and Roger Goodell talked this afternoon, everybody's focused on and saying that, hey, we've got to have more review of the officials.
Yeah.
They're essentially saying we need more officiating. I don't think that's the solution. I don't think it's to expand replay. I don't think it's to get better officials. I think it's to look at what the officials are being asked to do. If you really want to change the way games are
being officiated. Do you want to go back to your colleague's idea, Dave Wyman, who says, listen, they shouldn't be calling those kinds of rules. It's ridiculous. Football is a violent game. Let it be violent and get on with it.
Yes, they should. Wow. They should backtrack from some of the things that they've done.
Hear, hear.
Just because your newspaper stinks, that's no reason to stop subscribing.
So says an old newspaper reporter.
That's correct. We'll talk about that next on Tom and Curly.
Welcome back to the Tom and Curly Show. Tom Tangney here, John Curly away today. He'll be back tomorrow. Danny O'Neill filling in. Make sure you text the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. That's 98973, the Online Trading Academy text line. Or go ahead and email us at mynorthwest.com inbox on our show page. So, Danny, you have a variety of strengths as a talk show host. And one is that you know everything there is to know about sports, but you also come out of the newspaper world. And there's always an interesting dynamic involved between broadcasting and newspaper, the print medium and broadcasting medium. And you've bridged both of those now having come over to Cairo Radio. So we're always curious about what your take is on the state of print journalism these days. And the story that we're using as a jumping off point is an article about whether you should continue to pay for your local newspaper or just give it up, like cancel in protest if your local newspaper, this has not happened to the Seattle Times, thank God, yet. The Blethyn Company still owns it. But there are more and more newspapers, for instance, the Mercury News in San Jose, that has been bought out by a hedge fund run publishing company called Digital First Media. And they're now after USA Today and many other smaller local papers. And the idea, the suggestion is that what Digital First does is strip mine the newspapers. It cuts newsroom staffs drastically, squeezing profit from operations with no concern about the welfare, ultimately, of the journalistic enterprise. And the question this one guy has is, I've been a serious news consumer for 20 years. I've subscribed. I'm now so mad at what Digital First Media does that I'm wondering, is it more of a blow to journalism to cancel my subscription, or to, you know, celebrate the fact that I'm canceling it because I do not want this strip mining to happen under my, you know, with my money?
It's an interesting question, because that what it's essentially saying, and the guy who's considering canceling his subscription to the Mercury News, which is now owned by Digital First and went from 25 years ago being one of the nation's top regional newspapers, something that was a rung below the national papers like the LA Times, the Washington Post, and the New York Times, but was a really good and did really important journalistic work, has now become in many ways an afterthought and inadequate and certainly lesser quality than what it once was while becoming more expensive. And that his only reason for not canceling is guilt. That he feels that he would be abandoning and stopping. He would make it worse by cutting the money that he's giving. And the answer, which is probably going to be very unsatisfactory to most people, is that, yeah, it would hurt. It would be part of the problem that your money is still predominantly going to pay for the salaries of reporters who are covering local city council meetings and doing more work than they ever had to do before. And you're going to accelerate the decline of print media. I firmly believe that newspapers are the first rung in keeping you informed about your community. It is the backbone upon which a lot of other media certainly climb up on. It's something we use as a reference point in doing a talk radio show.
On radio, absolutely.
The people who are covering and sitting. Look, it stinks to sit in a city council meeting. That's not fun. It's extremely boring.
Yeah.
It's oftentimes unimportant. But it's also really important for someone to do that who is not beholden to the government, who's not responsible for it. I feel very strongly. I've worked at the Seattle Times 3 different times. I love that newspaper, and I love the people that work there. And the challenge, we're very fortunate in Seattle because we don't have a newspaper that is being run for profits. Their goal is long-term viability.
Right.
And that's what they're seeking to accomplish. And if you're in a place where you've seen, in the Bay Area, is, in many ways, is one of the most ravaged communities in terms of local coverage. Yeah. My mom lives in Santa Cruz. She used to subscribe to the Mercury News. She doesn't anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's become an inadequate paper. How you bridge that gap and what's going to happen, I don't think anybody knows. We're looking at the very real possibility of major cities being without a daily newspaper. That could become a reality here in the next couple years.
Yeah. And then the question is, if the daily newspaper does go away, God forbid, will the radio broadcasting outfits and the television broadcasting outfits, you know, fill in the gaps? Will they be able to do what newspapers do? The difference between a print medium and broadcast medium are pretty stark, and the broadcast medium has been happy to let the newspapers do all that kind of investigative, digging that requires a kind of print medium temperament, maybe. I don't know if that's the right word or not, but the idea is that will newspapers, the journalism the newspapers accomplish, will it end up being not done, or will it be done by other mediums? I would like to think that somebody like Cairo Radio or Cairo TV would pick up the slack, but until that happens, we don't have to.
I'm not that optimistic about that for the simple reason that it's not like our revenues are going up. It's not like the money that was going to newspapers in the form of display advertising
has migrated
to radio, which can now fund the news gathering operation. It's extremely expensive.
Yeah.
It's expensive to run a newspaper and to staff and cover all of these meetings and to do all of the things that newspapers have traditionally done. Websites are springing up. Then you get into the question, though, and this bridges into the fake news debate of a website. You don't have the same certainty that it's as verified as a newspaper is. We have trusted and accepted standards for the newspaper. And you can debate about all those and bias and all those things. But there's a standard, a uniform standard that you can expect from a newspaper.
Yeah.
And newspapers hold each other accountable and those sort of things that happen. The internet and internet-based publications are still in many ways the wild, wild west.
Yes.
There is not an accepted standard. And then you have something like BuzzFeed where you don't even know are the people that are generating the content being paid like professionals.
Perfect. That's a nice segue into the other story that kind of caught people off guard. So BuzzFeed let a huge, not a huge percentage, but something like 25% of its staff. If you don't know BuzzFeed, it's an internet-based site that was very popular for all sorts of reasons. They did some serious journalism, and they actually are on the hot seat right now for covering the Trump presidency and the whole Russian investigation issue right now is sort of put them back on their heels. But they do serious journalism, but they also, I think, are most famous for doing these quizzes, the things that it's like perfect clickbait. If you were, a character on Friends, here's a quiz you take, and it'll tell you which character. Were you Joey or Rachel and the like. And it turns out that among the sliced staffers was the guy who ran the quizzes, and he fessed up, or maybe he didn't see it as a confession, but just acknowledged that there were most of the online quizzes that BuzzFeed ran to some profit, I assume, were done by volunteers. And they contacted, he mentioned this one woman who herself, she had done 692 quizzes without getting paid, mind you, 692 quizzes. And she had over 500,000 hits on numerous of these quizzes. And now the big scandal comes out is, first off, this is an outrage that BuzzFeed was not paying her. But secondly, did her not getting paid help the demise of newspapers or newspaper reporters or journalists or online reporters actually getting paid to do those quizzes that she helped gut the BuzzFeed itself? You can't win for losing with her.
Here's the thing.
Okay.
That should terrify anybody that just assumes, websites will rise up and be more accurate than newspapers.
Yeah.
Some of these websites are not viable, and they're not paying living wages to their employees. How sustainable a business is that? How sustainable a business is it if one of the people that's producing some of your most popular content is not getting paid?
Yeah.
Like, that's not a business model that's going to float going forward.
True enough. But at the level of quizzes, who cares? I don't care who writes my quizzes. It's somebody who's reporting on, the news of the day. That's where it really gets dicey. And without newspapers, it'll get dicier, I think, in the future.
I'm afraid of reading the text line right now. All these savages out there don't care about the newspapers. $3 is expensive for a Sunday paper. It's a bargain for what it's being produced.
That.
All right, we're going to get to our letters next, so sharpen your crayons, knuckleheads. We're going to read them.
Tom and Curly's mailbag is presented by Care Partners Senior Living. That's right, Care Partners Senior Living, doing good work, much like John Curley today, off doing a volunteer hospice training. This is the time of the show where we turn over the reins to the best part of this show, the listeners, and I think all we need to do is spot that mailman.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Okay, Danny, what do you see? What do you like?
Well, Dell in Dallas says, Danny O is awesome. P.S. Boycott the Super Bowl.
Hey, there you go. Chris on Twitter, but is Danny standing on his chair the whole show?
Is that a joke I'm unfamiliar with?
Yesterday, someone asked John to stand up, and so when he stood up so she could see him, I stood up so she could see me. John says she doesn't want to see you and didn't like me towering over him, so he stood on his chair and did an entire segment from his chair, couldn't play sound or anything, just to prove his point.
I could see that. Larry in West Seattle, you really have to work on your Curly act. Having a left-wing love-in with Tom does not give off the same vibe as the verbal sparring that the true listeners are addicted to. Here is a hint. My crew and I can count on one hand how many times John has said to Tom, I agree. Revel in your opportunity to mimic Curly, make facts up, avoid logic like the plague, and above all, in response to anything bad, just say, thanks, Obama, and keep defending the prez, because 63 million voters can't be wrong. Well done.
He's got a John down. On the Midwest Freeze, 585 says, hey guys, newsflash, the Midwest is a place of weather extremes year-round. It's hot as hell in the summer and cold as bleep in the winter.
While I've been doing the show, I got a call from my brother who lives in Minneapolis.
Oh, wow.
And I thought about calling him. Hey, is it cold there?
Yeah.
Sounds like it's been cold.
Minus 60, I hear.
From the 253. Tom, the reason they changed the term from global warming to climate change is that it was confusing to people that don't understand the issue. Mm-hmm. Global warming refers to changes to the global average temperature. Changes of only a degree or so to this average have a butterfly effect on the climate that lead to the extreme weather that you were talking about. People who think that global warming is fake because it gets cold in some places have no idea what they're talking about.
That I agree with. And a 425, the cold weather is just fine as long as you have a Tauntaun and a lightsaber.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside. Potty Parody, 206, I'm with Rachel. I do not want to share bathrooms with men. Gross. It's bad enough having to share with them at home.
Wow, I didn't realize there was such animosity on that score. 402, I have cleaned bathrooms. Women's restrooms are always more dirty. Rachel is showing her bias. Also, it is representative of modern feminism that they want more bathrooms, not equal bathrooms. We should be looking for equal bathroom opportunity, not equal bathroom outcome.
No, we should be measuring the lines.
Nice try.
The weight. 253, sorry to dump on your idea, Rachel, but you're in the wrong on this one. Better evacuate the building before you piss us off and everyone runs. Hope you liked all my puns. You're my new favorite person on the radio.
Aha. And NFL Insurance, 360. NFL doesn't need insurance. Just have the players sign a waiver to play. You may not get all the best players, but surely there would be enough to keep the league going. I wonder.
From Gloria in the 707. Tom and Danny, I have three words for you. Pelota de Trapo. It's an old Argentine film on poor kids playing football with a rag ball. Those were the days pre-Messi.
Ah, wow. And a 425. How do publicly funded high schools justify the expense of non-academic activities like football? The Los Angeles School District just settled a teacher strike. Was defunding football on the table in order to fund academics?
From James in Issaquah, dancing is a contact sport. Football is a collision sport, Vince Lombardi. Mm-hmm. And the physics of those collisions have become worse since Lombardi coached because the players are bigger and faster.
That's true, too. On the Roomba lawnmower, I think it's called the Terra, Ann and Everett. I think this robo lawnmower will be done when it runs over Fluffy.
That's true.
Just saying.
Fluffy won't be Fluffy anymore. From the 206. Oh! Danny is right about how dumb the robots are. Our Roomba trundled right through a pile of poop. One of the dogs left on the rug. The horror.
And 253, Roomba lawnmowers? I can see the sequel now. Maximum Overdrive, the rise of the mowers. Tagline, the mowers rise up and your toes come off.
That's exactly right. Sean in Arlington, soon in the wake of the mower Roomba, enter the dog poo Roomba. Yes, it wanders around your yard looking for canine landmines. If the poo Roomba cannot tell if the item it encounters in your yard is or isn't actually dog poo, it will take a picture or two and send you a multimedia text with two hyperlinks saying, is this dog poo? Hyperlink one, yes. Hyperlink two, no.
Perfect. On telecommuting. 425. Tom, sartorial splendor. First rule of journalism. Don't force your listeners or readers. Look up the dictionary of a definition of your circumlocution.
From the 707. Wow, sartorial splendor. Orifice. Bacchanalia. Words never heard on Cairo till today. January 30, 2019. Good on you guys.
We love the erudite words.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Comes from somebody calling himself, at least, Chris Sullivan. Hey, you knuckleheads, haven't you been paying attention? The solution to long lines at public restrooms is, of course, the zipper merge. I'm not saying nobody will scully their skivvies because of their inability to hold it, but what plan is perfect? Just to clarify things, the zipper merge does not refer to a zipper merging with one's member. That is painful as hell. Thank you, Chris.
I'm horrified.
So it's the real Chris Sullivan.
Out of time. Bye-bye.